Well, today we're in a series called Brand New, and so we'll be walking into message number two of this series called Totally Free. And this comes on a time where this weekend, it's Memorial Day weekend. And for most of us, this weekend is more or less the start or the kickoff for summer, right? That's kind of how we look at Memorial Day weekend. But the reality is Memorial Day weekend is a very serious celebration, memorial. It's remembering those that have given their lives for our freedom. Where originally it was called Decoration Day, it started out of the Civil War, where the Civil War was the one war in America that the most lives were lost during that war. And then after that, they began to initiate having some cemeteries that were just for soldiers because so many people had died during that, that they had to do something in order to cover that. And so then on top of it, then shortly thereafter, they started what started to be known as Decoration Day. And down the South, they celebrated on a different time than up North for obvious reasons there. And then back in the 60s, they voted to make it a law that it was Memorial Day to be celebrated the last Monday in the month of May. And that became law, I think it was 1971. And so really this weekend is all about a serious moment where people have given their lives for our freedom, where they've given their lives as soldiers. My phone picked up my voice and decided it wanted to start talking to me. But Memorial Day weekend is that time where we look and we remember people that have given their lives for our freedom. And so it's a serious time. And so within that, I kind of want to have a serious message as well, where I want to talk about the seriousness of the spiritual implications of being free, where spiritually, to kind of move from Memorial Day weekend to what we would celebrate in a church setting, from a spiritual standpoint, we look at where we are and where the world is for forever, really, in that we are people that tend toward being in bondage and need to be freed. Say, well, I don't know if I agree with that. How many of you would say you feel like you're in bondage right now? Like one, two, three, four. Okay. I want to prove to you that every single one of you are in bondage right now. Okay? And I mean, this is me against 99% of the church right now, so we'll see how this works out. Let me give you some history first. From the beginning, people struggled with bondage. People struggled with being enslaved to something. Cain, the first generation. So you have Adam and Eve, and then the first generation is Cain and Abel. Do you remember with Cain and Abel, they had this big fight? It was a spiritual battle where it was a worship war where Abel was approved before God and Cain wasn't. And so Cain goes, and he's so mad, he's so jealous, he's so filled with anger that he goes to confront his brother. And you remember the conversation between Cain and God? God says to Cain, "What are you doing? Why are you going this direction? Why is your heart filled with this anger?" And so that's what's going on, and he's slowing him down or trying to get him to stop from going the direction that he's going. But he's so enslaved, so enraged, so filled with this that he literally just says, "I can't help myself, but I must go do this. I must go confront my brother, and whatever happens is whatever happens, and I really need to make a show here." And so he does, walks right past God, just almost at the point of, "I can't control myself," and goes and murders his brother. Generations later, we find that's Genesis chapter 4. Go to Genesis chapter 6, and you find there that the entire world was so enslaved, so in bondage to doing things that were hurtful and abusive. You think things are bad in our culture today as far as abuse, as far as people hurting each other? If you go back then and you look at what was happening at that point in time, the abuse was so horrible, it was so bad that God looked and he did what he would do as God without interfering with their minds, but allowing for them to make their own decisions, having a will to choose things. And he goes and warns and gets to the point where he says, it's time for me to wipe out the entire world with a flood. That's serious stuff. It was that the world was so abusive. It's that people could not help themselves. They were so enslaved, they just couldn't help it. They were hurtful, they were abusive, and God interfered then by destroying the entire world. Then he said, I'll never do that again that way. Generations later, you'd think we'd learn, right? Generations later, a whole city was enslaved to such cruelty. The entire city was in such a bad place. They were cruel and abusive to guests that came into the town. They wanted to abuse them in ways that we would look and we wouldn't even want to talk about in church setting. And God destroyed the entire city. They couldn't help themselves. The whole town, they couldn't help themselves. They were just enslaved to this. For generations that followed, you see individuals and nations that simply could not help themselves but to be hurtful toward others. That's still a problem today. You say, well, I'm not that bad. I know. We have great people here, right? So let's dial it down a little bit. Each of us struggles to be free from hurtful thoughts or actions toward others. Would you agree? You're still struggling. I don't know that I want to agree with you yet, Pastor. I'm not that bad. I know you're not. When you get irritated, how many of you have gotten irritated before? We're getting 50% now. That's good. Okay. So you've gotten irritated before. How many of you have gotten irritated in the last week? Okay. Inside of us, when we get irritated, what happens is we're pushed in an emotional direction or a rational direction because we're irritated because that person is doing something that's totally irritating. You might be next to someone that's totally irritating. That's okay. Or you might be, you know, avoiding someone that's really irritating that's around you. But here's the reality. When we're irritated, what we want to do, what we are thinking about is how we can get back at or how we can kind of let that person have a piece of our mind. And sometimes when we're irritated, here's what happens as parents. You ready? Our kids irritate us. Sometimes they irritate us really bad because they do something that we're like, we told you 1,000 times upon 1,000 times not to do that, and they still do it. Have you had kids like that ever? Right? You were that child once, just saying. And you get irritated, and here's what you want to do. You want to say to them, you want to do something to them that's just out of total, I'm angry with you, and I need to just let this out and let you have it and tell you the way you want to just let it go. And how often do we actually do that? I mean, think about that. Where we say things, don't raise your hand, but have you said something that's hurtful? That after you said it, in your mind, you're like, where did that come from? I couldn't help myself but to say that. Why did I say that? And you're in total regret over something you said or something you did. Maybe it was you looked at something or someone in a lustful kind of a way or in a covetous kind of way where you looked and you're like, oh, I shouldn't. And you kept looking and you had thoughts that ran in a direction that's totally wild. And you're like, oh, what am I doing? And afterwards, you kind of pull back and you're like, I just couldn't help myself. I had to look. I had to go there. But I shouldn't have, and I knew better than to go that direction. And you were fighting inside of yourself, and you lost the battle. And at the end of the battle, it was, I couldn't help myself. I just had to say. I had to look. I had to commit this action. I had to go this direction. Now, based on that definition, without raising your hand, wouldn't that include all of us? Now, I know there's a couple, you know, goody two-shoes there, like, no, I don't have that struggle at all. And fair enough. But I think for all of us, myself included, we have those moments or seasons where it's like, where did that come from? Why did I say that to my spouse? Why did I do that to my friend? Why was I so unkind? That person just wanted to get in so when we're driving so that they wouldn't wreck or whatever. And I cut them off. I wouldn't be nice to them. And why am I doing that? And what I find is that we all struggle with this. We all struggle. We're all enslaved in that kind of way. We all have this battle inside of us that's warring, that says, you know what? You know the right thing that you should do, but I just can't help myself but do the wrong thing at times. So what's the solution? Who will set us free is the question. How will we gain freedom? Memorial Day is a time where we remember people that gave their lives to give us the freedom to be able to worship in this way, to be able to have the freedom in our country to do what we're doing. Here's the reality. In a spiritual sense, we need that freedom also. So who will give us that freedom? I mean, that's a simple answer, right? We know the Sunday school answer. It's what? Wow. Come on. You can do it, class, right? Who will give this freedom? Joel's God. Anybody else? Right. You know where it's like, Pastor, I'm not even going to say it because I just feel dumb saying it. It's Jesus, of course. Well, we're going to get there. But here's the reality. Here's what we're trying to tackle in this series. If you're anything like me, you struggle with a substitute for Jesus. What does that look like? Last week, we talked about the temple model. You remember? Maybe you weren't here. Go ahead and listen online. You can hear the whole message from last week. There's this temple model that started way back before Jesus, where the idea was, in the temple model, that there is a sacred place where God meets with a sacred group and communicates his message through a sacred person. That's what this temple model is, where you, in order to have a spiritual moment with God, you need to go to the sacred place, so that you can be with the only other people that can handle being there are the sacred people. And the person that's up front doing the speaking is someone that's communicating. He's that sacred person. It's always a he. Is communicating, you know, I'm saying, you're communicating the message that God has given, right? And so that's what these sacred institutions are, where it's, okay, I'm going to this place to get my God fix. And so oftentimes what happens when we are struggling with doing the right thing, when we're struggling with, man, I just can't help myself. I need to fix myself. I need to do something different. Here's the substitute. We often will say, well, if you went to church more, if you went to the sacred place more, then you'd be fixed. Well, if you are like this sacred group, and you dress this way, or you carry this thing, or you talk this way, or you went to, and you fit in with the sacred group, and you do these sacred things, and if you listen to the sacred person that's communicating this message, and if you're there just around this person, kind of getting the pixie dust off of the sacred person of spiritual matters, you'll be better. You won't have those issues. You won't have those things. If you do what the sacred group says, if you're there where the sacred group is meeting, then you'll be fine. Now, I've bought into that thinking. You know what I found? I found confusion. Because I don't know about you, sometimes, after meeting in a sacred place with a sacred group, hearing from a sacred person, 5 minutes later, I'm doing what I said I wouldn't do. Have you ever been there? Maybe it looks like this. We're here. We're meeting in this sacred place with a sacred group and the sacred person speaking, and you get into the car afterwards, and your child is irritating you because they're putting the window down, putting the window up, locking the door, unlocking the door, and they do it 20 times. And you're like, I'm trying to be patient. I'm trying to be loving. I'm trying to be kind. Little Johnny, can you please not do that? And he does it again. Little Johnny, it's really good for you not to do that at this time. You know, and they do it again. And they're laughing and giggling, and they're goofing around a little bit, and they have a little juice box while they're doing it, and they giggle a little bit too much, and they squeeze it, and there's juice all over the place. And they do it again, and you're sitting there, and you feel it inside of you, right? You know that, oh, I can't go there. I'm not doing that. I just met in the sacred place, and I was with sacred people, and I heard the sacred person say, you need to be kind, loving, and gentle, and all this other stuff. So little Johnny's going to get gentle me because I was at the sacred place with sacred people, hearing from the sacred person, and we're good, and I'm not going to let this go. And he does it again. And as the juice is going in the air and the lock is up and down and the window and all of that at the same time, in your mind, it just boils up like a volcano and you can't control it. And out comes Johnny! Right? And the windows shatter. And your family, your wife or your husband and your other kids look and they're like, what just happened? We just left church. We didn't even get onto Evesham Road yet. And we're losing our minds, right? You've never been there, have you? But the reality is, even while I'm in the sacred place with a sacred group, hearing from a sacred person, listen, even while I've been in this place, I'm tempted to do the things I know I shouldn't do. Isn't it aggravating? You with me? Who's going to pay for it? Who's going to change? Who's going to do something about this is the question. The Apostle Paul was so familiar with this struggle. He was so familiar with the temple model. This is what he had grown up in. And he taught, and he was very zealous for this temple model. His name was Saul first, and he was Jewish. He memorized most of the Old Testament, the law, and listen, he was, as far as a spiritual guy, he was way up the ladder. Very smart, very intelligent. He would be called the Hebrew of Hebrews, Pharisee. He was just way up there on that spiritual chain, and he understood. He understood the temple model. If there's anyone to understand it, he got the temple model. The sacred place with a sacred group and a sacred person. He got it clearly. But then he came face to face with Jesus Christ. And his life was totally changed. And when he discovered that Jesus Christ was the Son of God to pay for all of the sins of the world, for his sin as well, he went from being someone that was zealous for the sacred place, for the sacred group, for sacred people that are in that sacred group. He went from that to being totally shifted away and being freed from that so that he could tell people about Jesus Christ. And so he goes through an absolute change. So then he goes and starts telling people in different communities. And he starts churches, not to start a sacred place, not to start a sacred group, not to have a sacred person up front. That wasn't the goal. The goal was, I want to tell other people about this person that saves us from our sins, this person that's freed us. He says, listen, I know this guy. I know who he is. I know what he's done in my life, and I'm telling you, this is what he can do in your life. He's here to free you. And so he goes from one town to the next. He gets to this one, and one of the earliest manuscripts that he's written back as a letter to this church is this letter to Galatia. And this is to churches in this region. And so as he's writing to this group, he writes, and if you turn there with me to Galatians chapter 5, here's the letter that he writes to them. We're going to jump into the middle to Galatians chapter 5. And the majority of this text that he's writing is all about freedom. It's freedom. It's freedom from the temple model. And when he sees the temple model coming back into the church, where the church comes out and they're like, wow, we love Jesus and this is who we are. And then they begin to come back around and they pull the temple model back in. He says, there's a problem. Listen, there's freedom. And that's what he says in Galatians chapter 5, verse 1. For freedom, Christ has set us free. He set us free. He set us free from the guilt. We don't need to live as guilty Christians, right? That doesn't belong in a Christ-like place. Doesn't belong in a Christ-like person. He says he set us free. We don't have to live in bondage to sin. We don't have to sin any longer. We've been set free from that. It's gone. It's over. He says, for freedom, Christ has set us free. So he says, stand firm, therefore. Stand firm, therefore. To stand firm is, I'm not moving. This is where I am. I'm not moving an inch away from this place. This is where I need to stay. Where is he staying? In the freedom that Jesus Christ has brought him. So he says, stand in that. And then he says, do not submit again to the yoke of slavery. Don't go back to being a slave. Listen, don't shift back. Don't go back to a place where you're enslaved again. Why would you do that? If you're freed from jail, why in the world would you say, hey, this is great to be out, but listen, guys, can you lock me back up because it's more comfortable back there? Why would you go back to that? And that's what he's saying. Listen, stand firm in the freedom you have in Jesus Christ. You can have victory over that sin. You can have victory over that action. You can have victory over that. You can live there. That's what he's saying. Don't go back and depend on anything other than Jesus Christ alone. So verse 2 is interesting. He says, look, and this look, it's like an exclamation point. He's making a very emphatic point. He's saying as a parent, you know, to a child that's not listening, look, right? Saying to a teacher that's trying to get the class attention, look, he's saying that in his text. He's saying, look, I, Paul, say to you that if you accept circumcision, whoa, wait a second, circumcision, where did that come from? Why is he talking about that? I mean, this is in the Bible, really. And it is, it's going way back. Where God initiated this ritual, this thing with this group of people where they basically went through the motion of being circumcised in order to say that God is it. I love God and he is everything to me. Well, what happens over time with any ritual is you begin to get, you walk away from the reason why, and then you get into just we do it because we do it. That's just the way we've always done things, so that's the way we're always going to do things. And so that's what happens within the Jewish tradition then. So circumcision then makes them this sacred group. And so what happens is, within this context, Paul is talking to this church, this group of churches, the group of people that have been now dialoguing with some other people about circumcision. And so here's the way the argument would go, very simply. Jesus was what? What's his nationality? Jewish, okay? So being a good Jewish person, circumcision was part of the Jewish tradition. So what they would argue for is they would say, hey, listen, we know that you believe in Jesus, but because you believe in Jesus, that's great. But what you need to do to be right with God is not just simply believe in Jesus. What you need to do is you need to have more of the temple model. You need to have more of the systems of what's going on here. And what you have to do is you have to be circumcised to be able to show that you're really part of that group. So what they're doing is they're putting two things together. We see this in our culture all the time where people are putting two things together to make things, to make up their own religion. It's kind of syncretism is how I would identify it. And here, the Apostle Paul is looking at it and saying, here's what they're teaching. They're teaching that, hey, Jesus was circumcised, and so because he was circumcised, if you're going to trust in Jesus, you should be circumcised as well. Now, did Paul have a problem with circumcision is the question. No. Listen, Paul was circumcised, right? He's not going against circumcision. He was circumcised. There's a lot of people in that place that were circumcised. There's a lot of people in that area that were circumcised. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of people here today that are circumcised. If you could raise your... No, just don't do that. But you understand, listen, as he's walking through this, he doesn't have a problem with the circumcision. The problem is that they're mixing things in. They're putting the two together. He says, I say to you that if you accept circumcision, if you're saying that I'm depending on circumcision, if circumcision is more important or equally important to you as Jesus Christ, this ritual, you've got to do it this way in order to be accepted by God. He says, Christ will be of no advantage to you. He'll be of no advantage to you. He says, I testify again to every man who accepts circumcision that he is obligated to keep the whole law. Listen, if you're going to go back, then forget about the new commandment. You remember the new commandment that Jesus said last week? He said, here's this new commandment that you love God with all your heart and you love others as yourself. Love God and love others. This new commandment is, don't worry about that. If you're going to apply circumcision to your life, if you're going to apply this temple model to your life, then listen, Jesus means nothing. There's no reason to trust in Jesus, because here's what you need to be doing. You need to keep all of the law, be absolutely perfect, and keep all 611 or 630 different commands that are given out here. You need to follow all of those. Yep, go get the surgery. Go ahead and do it, but keep all of the law, is what he's saying. So he goes on, he says, I testify again to every man who accepts circumcision that he's obligated to keep the whole law. Verse 4, you are then severed. It's a wordplay there. You are severed from Christ. You who would be justified by the law. Here's what they're saying. To be justified is, I'm declaring myself right before God. Listen, can I just push back a little bit? In your life, what do you say that declares you as right before God? We're going to dive into this a bit more next week, because I think a lot of Christians, myself included, need to be challenged here. Because we get into a system or a ritualistic way of doing things, and we say, I'm right with God because I declare myself right with God because I'm doing this thing. You know what that often looks like? I go to the sacred place. And if I miss going to the sacred place, then I must not be right with God. And I feel really, really guilty about not being in the sacred place with the sacred group and hearing from the sacred person. Wait a second. That's not what God ever intended. Isn't that the mixing then? We're going to dive into that next week. And you'll want to be here for next week to hear that. But here's what he's chasing out. He's saying, you are declaring yourself righteous by the things you do, by the law. Because you're saying, listen, I'm better than, because I perform at 700 or 500 and so commands, and you're at, you know, 400 and some commands. And I'm better than, and we kind of have that ladder or the rung going up there. He's saying, that doesn't help you at all. You can't declare yourself righteous by the law. He says, here's what you've done. You've fallen away from grace. You've fallen away from grace. You know what grace is? Grace is a gift. Grace is a gift. Now, let me illustrate that. Say, I'm going to pick on Bill and Teresa. They're generally pretty nice people. I'm kidding. But say they were like, you know what? I want to be a blessing to Pastor Bill. And so they decided, I'm going to get him a gift card to where? Yeah, there we go. All right, we're on. Okay, Texas Roadhouse. Okay. So, super nice, and they're like, we're going to get him a gift card for Texas Roadhouse for, and let's just be fun. I'm not saying you're going to do this, but for $100, okay? And they come up after church, and they say, hey, listen, Pastor, we just want to be nice to you, just to love on you, and that's it. Just no strings attached. We're giving you this gift, a $100 gift card to go to Texas Roadhouse because we know you like steak so much, and so you go have a great time. And so my wife's next to me, and we're like, wow, that is so nice. That's so, man, I can't believe that. But we feel so guilty. Have you ever felt guilty when you're getting a gift? Isn't that horrible? You feel like, oh, what do I? And so here's what we do. We say, man, Bill, Teresa, thanks so much. But listen, I can't accept that. Why don't I give you $50 for that gift card? Like, can I give you that? And they say, well, no. It's a gift card. I want you to have this. This is for you, to be a blessing to you. And we're like, no, but I feel so bad. And they're like, well, because you feel so bad, that's okay. and we negotiate down to $25. And I give them $25 so I don't feel bad and such. Do you realize what I've just done? I've made a gift card a discount card. You see that? It's not grace. It's not a gift. It's now a discount. I'm now getting 75% off. Great deal. Right, ladies? It was on sale. Right? Okay. And guys, we get that too sometimes, but ladies really get into that so much more. That's what we're doing. It's making a discount. When I add anything into Jesus Christ, I'm adding any kind of ritual, any kind of thing into Jesus Christ. Here's what I'm doing. I'm discounting grace. Instead of it being a gift that God has given to me, this relationship that I have with Him, it's a gift. Instead of it being a gift, now, because I go to church, because I give money, because I'm nice, because I'm the best person around, because I do this and I do that and the other, I'm discounting grace, and now I have 25% over here that's on me. That's not grace at all. You see the problem? We've now nullified. We've now made grace to be absolutely nothing. It's empty. It's worthless. It's dependent on us. See, grace is free, and grace sets us free. To mix grace with anything in order to make yourself look better in God's eyes is totally empty. And I suspect that this is what makes the church so resistible. Let that sink in a little bit. We talk about grace. We talk about God's love, amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. But then when someone acts like a wretch, when someone doesn't perform at the right level, when someone irritates you and doing something that you don't like or whatever, here's what happens. We put into our system of belief, not simply grace, we add into it the work. So, well, you need to go and do this. You need to make sure you're here twice a week. You need to make sure that you give X amount, and you need to do. And we add into that all these other things and saying, look, you've got to make God happy. Here's the 25% that's on you. And we miss it. I'm always reminded of some of the things that I've heard many years ago of people that have been hurt by the church. One girl who's a grandmother at the time, I'll never forget the story that she shared as a teenager. I was sharing Christ with her, and she said, no, I'll never go to church. I'm like, what? Why? She said, when I was younger, I went to church, and I was poor. We didn't have anything hardly. And I remember on Easter Sunday, I went to go to church, and I got there with the dress that I had. I only had one dress to wear on Sundays. And I go with that, and I was made fun of, and I was told how lousy I am because I didn't have my Easter best. I didn't have a great outfit. Here's what happened. The grace that God has given through Jesus Christ is what brings us in. And what gets added in is people's preferences of this, that, or the other thing. And as we add what we prefer as our rules, we end up hurting people around us. So then it is not totally free to be with Jesus. It now costs us this work, this action. We nullify grace. I believe that the church that is irresistible is the church that is practicing grace and love all the time. I believe that a Christian that's irresistible is a person that is practicing love and grace all the time. And the only way they can do that is to depend on God. To go down a little bit further in this text, let me finish it out here. He says in verse 5, "For through the Spirit by faith we ourselves eagerly wait for the hope of righteousness. For in Christ Jesus, because of Christ, in him, neither circumcision or uncircumcision counts for anything." So you take circumcised, listen, whether you're circumcised, whether you're not circumcised, it counts for absolutely nothing in Jesus. He says, but only faith working through love. Only faith working through love. So to summarize this one verse is to say the only thing that counts for anything is faith working through love. The only thing that counts for anything is faith working through love. Not your church attendance, not your giving, not all of the other things that we might have put on top of that. Not the way you dress or the way you don't dress or whatever it might be. It boils itself all the way down to this. The only thing that counts for anything is faith working through love. And listen, Paul's only restating what Jesus has already said. Take all the commandments and boil it down. What's the top commandment? Love God with all your heart, your mind, and your soul. And the second is like it, to love your neighbor as yourself. What Jesus is instituting here is something brand new. It's not the temple model. It's not based on all our actions, our words, our deeds, and things like that. It's based on our love for God and our love for each other. It's the only thing then that counts for anything is faith working through love. So here's the reality. Each one of us have to fight for this. We've already been set free, but we have to fight for that freedom to stay there. Here's why I know. We struggle with bitterness when someone is constantly an irritant to us. When someone does not perform at a right level in our marriage or in a relationship, when someone's not performing at a level that we expect, we get bitter with them, and we're like, you don't clean up after yourself. You don't do this. You're not nice enough. You don't talk this way. And we struggle with bitterness. We have a performance model of our relationships. Is that love? Let's go back. Jesus, how were the people performing when he was being absolutely loving? Do you remember? He's on the cross, tortured in absolute pain, giving his life for the very people that are being just hateful and obnoxious and proud and disrespectful and irritating to him. And here's what he was doing. I love you. While you're performing poorly, while you're performing totally wrong, while you're performing in a way that this is absolutely opposite of everything that I've come to do, while you're performing there, I'm loving you. This is where we should be. So people that aren't performing well, we don't get irritated and bitter and hateful. We don't have a prejudice going on. All people are people, and we love everyone. And that's where we start, and that's where we finish. We've been set free. And we live in this freedom, and we fight for it. And it's a constant fight in our own selves to stay there, to stay totally free. So we're not bringing bondage back into our lives, and we're not bringing stuff back in and being held back by the things that we should be releasing. Instead, what we're doing is we're saying, I'm going to love you regardless of the way you're treating me, and I'm going to love God regardless of the way my circumstances are going. They're probably my fault anyway, but I'm going to love God all the way through this, and I'm going to put him first. He says, as you do this, and I'll give you, this is the preview for next week. In verse 16, he says, but I say, walk by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the flesh. As you walk with God, you won't gratify the desires of the flesh. As you're walking tightly with God, it's not, I went to the sacred place with the sacred group to hear from the sacred person. It's not those things that I'm doing. It's that I'm walking with God. So as we love God, we love others. We don't excuse ourselves and say, I just couldn't help myself. We don't give that as the excuse, and we go into it thinking, well, who cares? I did that last week. I can do that again. Instead, we say, God, I love you. I don't want to do this. I need your strength to love the way that you love me. It's a total game changer. Could you imagine your family, your friends, your church, living this way? Could you imagine if you could apply this just for 1 week, what a difference this would make. The people that are on your last nerve, the people that have intentionally hurt you, the people that have done wrong to you, what if you love them the way Jesus loves you? The only way you'll do that is by loving God first. That's the only way. You won't do this on your own merit. You won't do this because you went to church. You won't do this because you're on the sacred group. I'm a Christian, so then I have to. That's not going to be enough. Guaranteed, I know it because I've done it. The only way that you can walk in this way is as you walk with God. Do you remember? He paid for you for your freedom. He wants you to stay free. So free that you are absolutely loving and gracious to people around you. So how do we do this? Well, next week, I'm going to dive in a little bit more to this. But for this week, it's a Memorial Day weekend. Most of you have off tomorrow. Here's what I'm going to challenge you to do. Would you spend time with God, walking with Him? Would you set aside some time out of your schedule today, tomorrow, the next day? Not because, oh, that sacred person told me to. I mean, I know I'm right to do that, but not because of that. But because you want a relationship with God. You want to walk with Him so that you can learn how to love Him more and love others around you so that you can live a life that's pleasing to Him. No regrets, but you're walking with Him. Would you take 15 minutes? Would you take 20 minutes a day? Would you take, maybe it's even 5 minutes that you just say, I got to start somewhere. I'll just do 5 minutes. Would you put your phone down long enough to spend time with God? Would you put the TV down long enough to spend time with God so that you could walk with Him and allow this to work out in your life throughout this week? It's a fight. It's a fight. And then as that person, as little Johnny, hits that window up and down, and this might happen to you on the way home today. I know it could, just saying. As he hits that window down and up, instead of you like, oh, I'm getting irritated, I'm going to let him have it, instead you're saying, man, God, I need strength to get through this so I can love on little Johnny. So what that might mean is instead of you hollering and screaming and saying you're such a terrible kid and all these other things that are absolutely unloving, unkind, and hurtful, what that might mean is that you pull the car over, not out of anger and rage, and I'm going to really let you have it, but instead you pull it over and you get out and you give him a hug and you say, hey, listen, Johnny, I communicated to you once that this is where it needs to be, and I want you to be a child that listens because I want you to hear my voice, but I want you to hear God's voice too. And this is so important for your life because we all have to stop and listen. And you love on them in a right way and lead them in a path that is absolutely toward Christ in it. Could you imagine the change that could happen in little Johnny's life and in yours as well? That you don't walk away feeling all guilty of, oh, I just couldn't help myself, I blew it. You walk away saying, man, to God be the glory. Great things He's done by His grace and by His love. And let's continue in it. Let's pray. Lord God, I pray that You would give us the strength to depend on Your grace. Just this week, Lord, may we apply this truth in our lives and be loving and gracious and kind in a way that You would have us to be. Lord, thank You that we're totally free. Thank You that we don't have to do our part and discount grace. Lord, we're totally free. And we give You praise. Through Jesus, I pray. Amen.